Psalm 15, what we have in verse 1 is a question. Lord, who shall abide in thy tabernacle? Who shall dwell on thy holy hill? Verses 2 to 5 are the inspired answer to that question. Verse 2, in a general sense, he that walketh uprightly and worketh righteousness and speaketh the truth in his heart. But then in verses 3 to 5, we have 8 specific actions or behaviors of a godly individual. And what we find is that 6 of them are negative and 2 are positive. That's interesting, isn't it? You talk about trying to not be so negative, be more positive. Who's going to heaven? 6 times. Don't do this, 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 don't do this. 2 times. They do this, they do this. So sometimes you gotta be negative because, you know, there's 2 kinds of sins. Sins of omission, sins of commission. And sometimes we do the things we should not do. And sometimes we fail to do the things we should do. And we have to be able to put that all together and seek God's help in having a life that's in conformity to His revealed will, as we find it in His Word. But the first one in verse 3 that is specific is, he that backbiteth not with his tongue. Now normally you think of biting with teeth, don't you? Well, here's a case of doing it with a tongue. And you say, well, a tongue doesn't seem very sharp. I've cut my tongue, but I've never cut anything with my tongue. Well, you ever read in the Bible where it talks about they have tongues like swords and razors and spears and sharp teeth? Tongues can cut. They cut to the quick. Harsh words, that is. Now, when it talks about backbiting, not with the tongue, the word for backbiting is a word you might not expect to be used for that, but at the same time, when you think about it, you say, yeah, that's very appropriate. The word itself of backbiting means he is one who gads not about with his tongue. You ever heard of gad about Gaddis? An old fisherman? Anyway, gadding about. The word itself means to foot it. We sometimes say, I'm going to hoof it. It means to foot it. To walk or to go about. You ever walk on your tongue? Some people walk on their hands. I've never seen them walk on their tongue. But some people do walk with their tongue, or they walk with a purpose of using their tongue. They go about in order that they might speak words that are illicit, forbidden. And in this case, backbiting. And I'll give you an example. Hosea chapter 11 and verse 3. God says, I taught Ephraim also to go. That word to go is the word here for backbiting. It's like taking a little child, teaching how to walk, taking them by their arms. But they knew not that I healed them. Now, this isn't just talking about going out for a stroll. It means to go about as a tale bearer or a slanderer. You ever seen the Fuller Brush Man? He goes about house to house peddling his wares. Well, that's the idea of this word. He is not a peddler of wares. Well, what kind of wares? Wicked words. He's not going around spreading evil talk and gossip, tale-bearing and backbiting. Do people walk about with their tongues? Psalm 73. Verse 8 and 9. speaking of the ungodly, which is the opposite of what Psalm 15 is describing, it says, they are corrupt and speak wickedly. Concerning oppression, they speak loftily. And notice how far they go with their words. They set their mouth against the heavens, and their tongue walketh through the earth. Well, that's quite a picture, seeing a tongue going all about the earth. Reminds me of somebody else. Remember when the Lord asked Satan what he was about? Where have you been? Walking to and fro through the earth and going up and down through it. Well, that's what they're doing here. Probably being led by the devil in doing it. Using their tongues to go about. All through the world. Maybe that's one reason in James chapter 3. He talks about how even so the tongue is a little member and boasteth great things. Right? To set its, you know, set itself even against God, that's pretty brazen. A little piece of flesh challenging the Almighty. And then acting like it's king of heaven and earth and goes about like it's ruling the world. Behold how great a matter a little fire kindleth. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members that it defileth the whole body. It setteth on fire the course of nature and is set on fire of hell. But it goes about through the earth, a world of iniquity. But you know what else this word is used for? It means to be a spy. You see it used that way in Joshua. You remember how Joshua, not just in Joshua, this is an example I'm going to use. Remember how he sent the spies to Jericho? Joshua 6, 23. And the young men that were spies went in and brought out Rahab and her father and her mother and her brethren. So there's a noun form, spies. Verse 25. Joshua saved Rahab the harlot alive and her father's household and all that she had. And she dwelleth in Israel even unto this day because she hid the messengers which Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. There's a verb form, spy out. So a backbiter is like a spy. He's sneaking around discreetly, secretly, trying to spread his malicious talk. And that's what it's saying here. Joshua 7, verse 2. It talks how Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai, which is beside Beth-Aven, on the east side of Bethel, and spake unto them, saying, go up and view the country. And the men went up and viewed Ai. There's the word, view. They're looking for information and material to spread about others. Spies, viewing, and Deuteronomy 1:24 uses it by the word searched. They turned and went up into the mountain and came unto the valley of Eshcol and searched it out. You know how the Bible says it's a man's glory to cover an iniquity? Well, they're searching out iniquities so they can tell others about them. A very, very bad purpose and reason to be going about. So, he does not go about or walk around to be a tale-bearer or a slanderer. Now the word itself, when it's used in this way of evil speech, it means to censure, to slander, to reproach, to calumniate, to defame, to detract, or a general word for it is to speak evil of another. To speak evil of another. I'll give you an example of one in 2 Samuel. Let's see it being done. Remember Mephibosheth, one of the sons of Jonathan, Saul's son, that David spared, and he allowed him to sit at his own table as one of his own sons and eat there on a regular basis. He was lame in his feet. Well, when Absalom rebelled against his father, and his father was forced to flee from Jerusalem for his life, you come down in 2 Samuel 19, and here you have David returning after the rebellion had been squelched and Absalom had been put to death. It says, "And Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king, and had neither dressed his feet, nor trimmed his beard, nor washed his clothes, from the day the king departed unto the day he came again in peace." Now what does that tell you? Mephibosheth was totally broken and saddened by what had happened. He was not at all happy about David having to run away. He wasn't happy about Absalom's rebellion. He couldn't wash or anything, nor, you know, his normal activities, until the king was returned in peace. And it came to pass, when he was come to Jerusalem to meet the king, that the king said unto him, "Wherefore wentest thou not with me, Mephibosheth? How come you didn't come with me when I had to leave Jerusalem?" And he answered, "My lord, O king." So David is suspicious of Mephibosheth. You know, if you're really loyal to me and grateful to me for what I've done, why did you forsake me in my time of trouble? Well, David had a reason for being suspicious because, we'll see here. He answered, "My lord, O king, my servant deceived me." Now he's talking there about Ziba, his servant, who was set over his lands and took care of all his concerns, you know, his flocks and crops and things. He says, "For thy servant said, I will saddle me an ass that I may ride thereon and go to the king, because thy servant is lame." In other words, I can't run to him. I'll ride on an ass and go to him. "And he has slandered thy servant unto my lord the king." In other words, he told you something about me that was not true. "But my lord the king is as an angel of God. Do therefore what is good in thine eyes." In other words, what can I say for myself? You know, "For all of my father's house were but dead men before my lord the king." You know, I should have been dead anyway. "Yet didst thou set thy servant among them that did eat at thine own table. What right have I therefore yet to cry any more unto the king?" In other words, you can do whatever you want, David. I never should have been spared to begin with and given such wonderful privileges you gave me. So I can't even plead for myself. If you want to reject me now and kill me at this time, I can't argue against it. I was as good as dead to begin with. "And the king said unto him, Why speakest thou any more of thy matters? I have said, Thou and Ziba divide the land." Whereas I've already taken care of your concerns. "And Mephibosheth said unto the king, Yea, let him take all." Now Ziba slandered Mephibosheth to the king. The king says, "You've already got, you know, things taken care of. I've provided for you." And Mephibosheth answers, "He can have it. Let him take the whole thing. For as much as my lord the king has come again in peace unto his own house. All I care is that you're okay and that you're back. We're together again." Now, that's his true feeling. How did Ziba speak of him to the king? Let's go back to chapter 16. Now, if you've had anybody look at you and say, "Why don't you like me anymore? Or why have you turned against me? You know, why have you done this to me?" And you had to say, "What are you talking about? I've never changed my feeling towards you. I've never done anything against you." And then you find out somebody had been talking about you to this person and turned them against you and made them think that you had done something terrible you never did in the first place. That's backbiting, see? And that's why 2 Samuel 16. Let's find out how Ziba slandered Mephibosheth to the king. This is when David's first fleeing from Jerusalem. When David was a little past the top of the hill, behold, Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, met him with a couple of asses saddled, and upon them 200 loaves of bread and 100 bunches of raisins. and 100 of summer fruits and a bottle of wine. Wow, Ziba really cares about David. Look what he's doing for him. Here Mephibosheth is abandoning him, and Ziba is providing for him. And the king said unto Ziba, what meanest thou by these? Why are you giving me this? Must be Ziba was a little bit of a questionable character. David didn't accept it at face value as being honest or genuine. And Ziba said, the asses be for the king's household to ride on, and the bread and summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine that such as be faint in the wilderness may drink. And the king said, and where is thy master's son? And Ziba said unto the king, behold, he abideth at Jerusalem. Where is Mephibosheth? He stayed in Jerusalem. For he said, today shall the house of Israel restore me the kingdom of my father. Oh, in other words, he's back there saying, I'm going to finally get my throne back and be king now that David's being taken out of the picture. That's what I've wanted all along. I've been waiting for this day. And so he says, then said the king to Ziba, behold, thine are all that pertaineth unto Mephibosheth. Right? If Mephibosheth is such a traitor at heart, and he never really sincerely appreciated what I did for him, he was never my friend, he was just waiting his opportunity to take the throne from me, and he sees this as his opportunity, then Ziba, you have what's his. He doesn't deserve it. He's a traitor. You know. And Ziba said, I humbly beseech thee that I may find grace in thy sight, my Lord, O King. Boy, what a phony. Listen to that talk. Sounds so concerned, so loving, you know, so friendly. He was lying through his teeth and trying to turn David against Mephibosheth and get what was Mephibosheth's for himself. And probably making sure that he had all the bases covered, so if David did come back, he would see his Ziba as a friend. But then the truth came out of his slander, and so Ziba ended up being judged in the end for that. So, here you have a case of slander. An example. The idea is, he does not circulate reports unfavorable to others. Some people just love to be able to say something bad about somebody. They thrive on that. Yeah. Yeah, well, in the end, God would deal with him for that. Yeah, he ended up... Yeah, okay. Yeah, that, in that sense. But he didn't end up getting what he thought he was going to get. He thought he was going to get it all. And David undid what he had said earlier when he found out the truth. Yeah. So, yeah, in the end, our words always do come back. And we have every idle word a man speaks, he will give account thereof, and especially evil words. So anyway, that was, I guess, I was thinking of the long term rather than the immediate. So, yeah, he didn't seem to suffer so much temporally.
Yeah, and, sometimes lying gives you a head in the world.
Yeah. No. No, it doesn't.
No, it's Mephibosheth. He gave up the world economy.
Right. Yeah, he... Yeah, but the question here is, who shall abide in thy tabernacle, not who shall have the most in this world's good. Yeah, so that's why he ended up losing out in the best things. All right, now, in this case of Ziba, he had told a lie. But when we talk about backbiting, what we say about another can be either true or false. You know, why are we saying this about someone? Is there a need to say this to the person we happen to be saying it to at the time? You know, we have to be careful. Who am I saying it to? Why am I saying it to them? Is there a need for this? Is it going to accomplish something valuable for that person or the person I'm talking about? Or is it otherwise? Am I just talking to talk about people? So it can be true or false, but normally it's said in such a way as to suggest evil. And in order to cause hurt to the subject that we're speaking of. So that's backbiting. You know, just speaking evil. If someone is doing evil, and someone needs to know they're doing evil, and we tell they're doing evil, that's not the same thing as speaking evil of or trying to cause evil to. You know, there are cases where, you know, well, in the scriptures, where Paul has to speak evil of some false teachers and name them in order to protect people from them and prevent them doing damage and harm and expose their true colors. You know, or you have the house of Chloe telling Paul that the church of Corinth is in contention and division. Now, was he trying to, or was Chloe trying to hurt the church of Corinth? No, they're trying to help it. How? By going to the only person that could deal with them and correct it. And so, in that sense, it's not that it's saying you can't say anything bad about anyone. It's saying you're not supposed to seek to say something bad or want to say something bad in order to hurt the person that you're speaking evil of. There's no reason for it. It's not going to accomplish any good. It's just that you're taking pleasure in tearing them down and causing them to look bad to someone else. And that's no good. That's something we must not do. Now, there's nothing worse than to secretly attack someone by talking behind their back. And that's what backbiting is. You're talking behind their back and attacking them, not directly, but secondhand, through someone else, in order to eventually reach them, to cause them hurt. And this is not good. In Proverbs 25, verse 23... Why do I say secret? Because it normally is. If it wasn't secret, you'd be telling the person themselves. So, Proverbs 25:23, it says, "The north wind driveth away rain, so doth an angry countenance a backbiting tongue." Now, we're going to look at the angry countenance part about that later on. But right now, we just want to look at a backbiting tongue. This is a different word than the word in Psalm 15. It means a hiding tongue. It means something that's covert. You've heard of a covert operation? You know, we have our FBI and CIA, they're doing their covert operations, something undercover that's not supposed to be seen or detected. In other words, it's talking about being secret. Being secret. Now, if you turn back to Deuteronomy chapter 13, verse 6, we'll see this word backbiting used in that way. Deuteronomy and chapter 13, verse 6. If thy brother, the son of thy mother, or thy son, or thy daughter, or the wife of thy bosom, or thy friend, which is as thine own soul, entice thee secretly, saying, let us go and serve other gods which thou hast not known, thou nor thy fathers, Don't agree with them, don't listen to them, don't pity them, don't spare them, don't conceal them, but kill them. In other words, you can't allow for that from anybody. But what he's saying is, if they entice thee secretly, that's the same word here as backbiting tongue, secretly. Another one is Judges chapter 3 and verse 19. Here we're talking about Ehud, who went to King Eglon of Moab in order to put him to death. Ehud was a judge of Israel who was going to deliver them from their adversaries. And the way he did it was he told the king in verse 19, after he had brought the king a present, it says, he himself turned again from the quarries that were by Gilgal and said, I have a secret errand unto thee, O king, who said, keep silence. And all that stood by him went out from him. Well, the secret errand was this dagger that he had hidden in his cloak that he buried in his stomach, so that even the handle went in and was enclosed by the fat, and he couldn't pull it back out, and the dirt came out. But anyway, it says, I have a secret errand unto thee. There's the word backbiting in Proverbs 25:23. Secret. Psalm 101, verse 5. Who wrote Psalm 15? Psalm of David. You know what David said in Psalm 101? There's certain kind of people I'm going to allow into my household and into my kingdom. And you know who they are? Well, I'm going to tell you who I'm not going to have around me. And he tells us the kind of people he would not allow within his court. Verse 5, he says, whoso privily slandereth his neighbor, him will I cut off. Privily, secretly, slanders his neighbor. David says, he's done. I have no place for that. He's out. He's gone. And so, backbiting is a secretly talking behind someone's back in such a way as to put them into a bad light, suggest evil of them, and to turn people against them and cause them ultimate harm of some kind. That's backbiting. Now, one thing as Christians we should do is to be very careful to guard the name and the character and the reputation of others. That should be something that we are very extremely careful of. Extremely careful of. Why? How important is that? Well, Proverbs 22:1 says that a good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, and loving favor rather than silver and gold. In other words, it would be better if I robbed all your money than that I took away from your good name. That's what he's saying. A good name is more valuable than great riches. Not to say I can steal from you and say, well, at least I didn't say anything bad about you behind your back. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying comparatively, it's worse to backbite than to rob someone of their goods and possessions. We should be very jealous for the rights and for the honor of our brother. Ecclesiastes 7:1, it says there, a good name is better than precious ointment in the day of death and the day of one's birth. But again, the preciousness of a good name, it excels that of very valuable perfume. And so, you know, we have to be sure we treat it for what it is, as something too precious to be trampled on and easily thrown away by our words. See, words can cause great harm and damage. Leviticus 19 warns us against this kind of behavior. Words cause great harm and damage. Chapter 19 of Leviticus, verses 16 and 17, says, thou shalt not go up and down as a tale-bearer among thy people, neither shalt thou stand against the blood of thy neighbor. I am the Lord. Thou shalt not hate thy brother in thine heart. Thou shalt in any wise rebuke thy neighbor and not suffer sin upon him. There you have. What's the answer to backbiting? Open rebuke is better than secret love. I love you too much to say anything against what you're doing, so I'll just talk about it to someone else rather than tell you to your face you're wrong. No, that's not right. How do you avoid backbiting? Go to the individual. Not go to other people talking about the individual. Go to the individual. Notice Proverbs 25. What's the difference between talking behind someone's back? Talking to their face. Right? That's what we should do. Proverbs 25, 8 through 10. Go not forth hastily to strive. Oh, I can't wait to get into this conflict. Wait. Slow down. Think it out. Lest thou know not what to do in the end thereof. It may end up being more than you expected, more than you could deal with and handle. When thy neighbor hath put thee to shame, you may get in such a hurry that you're going to find out he's going to get the best of you because you didn't make your plans and think it through. Debate thy cause with thy neighbor himself. Notice, if you have a problem with your neighbor, if your neighbor sin against you, rebuke him. Go to him and discover not a secret to another, lest he that heareth put thee to shame and thine infamy turn not away. In other words, it's heard that you're circulating these unfavorable reports. They come back to you and say, you know, that's a shameful thing to be talking this around, and you have an infamy, you know, a blot on your character that doesn't go away. You know, Matthew 18:15 tells us the right way to start when something, you know, is done to us by another. Verse 15, moreover, if thy brother shall trespass against thee, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. If he shall hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother. How do I tell him? Go to him, tell him his fault between you and him alone. And then hopefully he'll respond properly. If not, then you take two or three others, or one or two others. And then if not, then you go to the church. But go to him alone and tell him his fault between you and him alone. Don't discover that to another before you even go to him about it. So, words are very potentially damaging. Let's look at a couple of verses like that. Proverbs 26:22. Sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Whoever said that never read the Bible. 26:22. The words of a talebearer are as wounds, and they go down in the innermost parts of the belly. I mean, they go deep, right to the quick. So, what did I say about whoever heard about getting stabbed by a tongue? Well, this tells me that the words of a talebearer are able to penetrate to our very soul. And guess where the wound starts? Not in the stomach. They stab you in the back. That's where the stab begins, in the back. 11:13 of Proverbs. It says, a talebearer revealeth secrets. In other words, if there's something that no one needs to know and it should be kept private, there's no reason to spread it and to tell anyone else about it. We have to be able to know what that is so we are careful not to spread it. That's what he's saying here. In other words, we have to make sure that if something is private, it doesn't go any further. A talebearer revealeth secrets, but he that is of a faithful spirit concealeth the matter. Now that can go the other way too. If there's something that needs to be made known, and if it's not made known, it's going to put people in danger or bring harm, then you better not conceal it, because that's wrong. I didn't want to say anything because I didn't want to talk about anybody, or I didn't want to, yeah, I felt bad to be the one to make it known. Well, if it needs to be known to prevent a problem, don't conceal it. But when it doesn't need to be known, and it only causes harm if you do make it known, and it's better kept private, don't reveal it. That's where we have to be discerning. Chapter 18:21 makes a statement that we have to always bear in mind: death and life are in the power of the tongue. As we can cause untold damage, and they that love it shall eat the fruit thereof. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. Do you know what that means? If we are tail bearers and backbiters, you know what we're guilty of? We may not physically kill anybody, but we are guilty of character assassination. We can put people to death in their reputation. And that is a very terrible thing that we need to be very careful of. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. Well, let me just bring out one more point, and then we'll close. Titus chapter 2, verse 3, Paul is telling Titus to speak the things that become sound doctrine, and he gives the women some directives, that the aged women likewise, that they be in behavior as becomes holiness. Well, what is fitting for holiness in an aged woman? Not false accusers. Now, that word false accusers in the Greek is diabolos. You ever heard of that word before? That's the word for devil. Diabolos. That they be not devils. Devils? And why is it called here false accusers? Well, the word devil means a slanderer. When we slander, we're doing the devil's work. And what is the devil trying to accomplish? To kill and damn souls. You know, Jesus said, "You're of your father the devil, and the lusts of your father ye will do." Well, what is that? What are the lusts of the devil that we do? It says he was a murderer from the beginning. Well, he's a murderer. How does he do it? Well, he abides not in the truth. He does it by lies, because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own, for he's a liar and the father of it. In other words, by slandering, spreading falsehoods, tale-bearing, and backbiting concerning others, we are actually being devils and doing his work, helping him to destroy souls. And that is not what we're supposed to be about as Christians. In other words, 1 Peter 5:8 says that we should be sober and be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, is a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. In other words, we're to be very watchful and careful and serious-minded, because the devil's out there trying to destroy us and our brethren in the world. And we need to resist him in the faith. Well, that would involve speaking words that God would have us speak, because when we speak wrongly, we're not resisting the devil, we're aiding the devil. Galatians 5:15, the devil's trying to devour us, to kill, damn, and destroy us. Well, Galatians and chapter 5 says, if we're not careful about how we speak of one another, that's what we will be doing. It says, if you bite and devour one another, take heed that you be not consumed one of another. In other words, if you're going to bicker and fight and speak evil of one another, beware. Beware. Because you may help the devil by doing his work for him. He wants to devour us, but we can devour one another by evil speech. And you know how Titus said, speak evil of no man. Speak evil of no man. Do not backbite anyone at any time for any reason. And that is one characteristic of a godly individual. He backbiteth not with his tongue. Our tongue has much more beneficial and worthwhile things that it can be used for, and backbiting certainly is not one of them. We should bless with our tongue and build up with our tongue, and we should minister grace with our tongue and bring benefit and blessing with our tongue. Backbiting is none of those. So let us not backbite with our tongue. You know, it's hard enough to control the tongue without giving it over as an instrument of unrighteousness. But let's yield it up to God, that he might use it as an instrument of righteousness to accomplish his work and to further his purpose and to build up and bless others, which is what God does, as opposed to the devil's work as a slanderer. So much for backbiting.